Hey everyone, this is Kevin at English Roundtable, and today I'm joined with Zane, and we are going to be discussing collecting, collectibles, all of that kind of stuff. And Zane, I know you've got a lot of things that you collect. Is that correct?
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Yes, indeed. I am definitely a collector of quite a few things. So maybe some you know, maybe some you don't know. But yeah, today I'll talk about a few of the things that I collect.
Sounds great. Yeah, I like collecting as well. I like knickknacks.
Okay.
That's kind of how I got started. And I think the first thing I started with collecting was keychains.
Right.
Just from, you know, different places that I visited or got from, you know, people that went traveling. So for me, that's kind of where it started. But how did collecting start with you? Were you a child? Did it start later?
So it was when I was a child. I guess when I was around 10, 11 years old, I had a bit of a fascination with Coca-Cola.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. Not a Coca-Cola drinker, but I like the shape of the bottles. Mm-hmm. I like the old collectibles.
Right,
there's a lot
right.
of history there with Coca-Cola as well, you know,
yeah.
being over 100 and something years old. So
right, right.
you can really go back a long way. I got interested in that and I was good friends with another guy in high school. He was a collector mm-hmm. as well. So both kind of followed our passion together, which
oh,
was good.
Really?
Like
okay.
we had a shared passion for it. We went to Coca-Cola collectors meetings where we
oh,
could
really?
Be surrounded with like 30 or 40 other people that were, you know, had the same passion. So
yeah, that's
I really
good.
Got into it.
Interesting. So, so you got started when you were younger with Coca-Cola. What was like the first kind of items that you started collecting? Were you a serious collector or did you just like the cans and bottles?
That type of thing? It started, I was just walking around the neighborhood and I noticed that somebody had put out some recycling
mm-hmm.
and they were really old Coke bottles
uh-huh.
at the time, sort of 20 or 30 years old Coke bottles. And I thought, well, I may as well grab those.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I did a little bit of research on them and found out that one of them was actually quite rare. And then I sort of discovered this whole collecting thing.
Oh, I
got into it that way, purely by accident.
I see.
And then I got deeper, became a member of the club, learnt a bit more about the history, learnt what the desirable things to collect were, and used to go around to antique shops, garage sales, secondhand stores, just wherever,
yeah.
Just looking for Coca-Cola stuff.
Oh, that's cool. So what would you say was the, I don't know about most value, but to you, the most valuable or most interesting that you got from when you were collecting Coke?
Okay. Well, my grandfather was really into, I guess collecting as well. He had various collections, mainly like rocks and minerals and things like that. So he kind of embraced any collecting passion within the family. So
right.
I've got some things that he gave me, like some older bottles and things like that he picked up. Which are very, very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And also when people would go on holidays, I'd ask them to pick me up something Coca-Cola as well. So,
oh, cool. So you have a variety of other countries.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. There's things from all over the world.
Yeah.
I have cut the size down a little bit now because it's all back in Australia.
Oh, okay,
the whole collection's back in Australia. So I've trimmed it down a little bit, but I've kept all of my favorite things.
Oh, that's cool. So you've had this for decades now.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
Like we're talking, I guess, close to 30 years that I've had this stuff. Yeah.
So my hometown is near Atlanta. So
right.
you probably know that's
home of Coca-Cola.
The home of Coke.
Yeah.
So they have the Coca-Cola Museum, which I know you should definitely make the pilgrimage there.
I've heard about this. Yeah.
I've heard about this.
I've seen videos online of it. I'd love to go there.
Yeah.
And that's been something that I'd like to check out for a while.
Yeah, you definitely should.
Yeah.
You especially as a collector, you would absolutely go crazy. You'd love it.
I'm sure I would. It might rekindle the passion as well.
Might.
So
yeah, if I when I go back, I'll try to get something for you, like a keychain or
something
like
yeah.
that.
Oh, anything.
Yeah.
Like I'm fairly varied in terms of what I collect regarding Coca-Cola. Like anything of interest, anything
right.
small that could be brought back easily. Yeah, I'd be
okay.
really happy.
All right, excellent. Keep it in mind.
Thanks.
Yeah, you would love it because as you know, you've studied it and you've watched the videos, but they have like the different Cokes from around the world, and that's pretty interesting. I like that section of the museum.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's all I can think about at the moment. I'd love to go there. But yeah, it was a really serious passion for me for a while, and then kind of other things took over as well. Like, I've always collected something for as far back as I can remember. But the very beginning was Coca-Cola.
Okay.
So that's my core.
Yeah.
So yeah, that museum just sounds wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. You should definitely make it a project to go there.
Yeah,
One day.
Even traveling around America, like, I've seen people's road trips of America, and there's still a lot of old Coca-Cola related things just here and there, like a lot of signs that are still on buildings and things like that.
Yeah, so, yeah. The painted on
old
buildings, they're still there, a lot of places, especially in the South where I'm from.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like the old signs, those are all over the place too. Like, you can find a lot of them at those what is it, like a trade fair?
Yeah, like swap meets and stuff
Yeah, people just selling on the side of the street.
Yep. That would be probably my core focus if I did go to the US, amongst other things. I'd love to sort of hunt for some old original Coca-Cola stuff.
Yeah, so, that would be cool. All right, so your base, your core is Coca-Cola.
Yep.
What would you say in your most recent collecting days now, what are you more into?
These days, I'm primarily focused on vintage video games and Casio watches.
Okay.
So those are my two main things these days.
Okay. So being in Japan, especially Tokyo, is a great place to, especially for old video game collecting, the maybe Mecca, would you say?
I would definitely agree with that. Yeah, it is the Mecca, and was definitely a motivating factor for me to come and live in Japan permanently.
Really?
It was definitely a factor.
Nice.
The fact that I had very, very easy access to a lot of vintage games and also a lot of older Casio watches as well, both online and in, you know, retail shops that I could go into. So, yeah, that was sort of part of the plan, I guess.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, it's good to have a goal or a reason to go somewhere.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Especially to up move your life and actually go there.
That's right. That's right.
And the hunt never stops, I guess.
It never stops. It never stops. So I got started on that collection more than 20 years ago well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've got probably a whole room dedicated?
There is a whole room, yeah.
Wow.
So in Tokyo, I've got a whole room set up. We're fortunate enough to have a fairly small spare room. Mm. And I've basically got industrial shelving all around, and it's filled basically floor to ceiling with games.
And please tell me it's earthquake proof.
It's somewhat earthquake proof,
okay.
I believe. It has been tested to a degree. Like, I've been in there when we've had a reasonable sized earthquake, and it shakes, but nothing fell down.
Okay, that's good.
Everything's bolted together fairly well, I'd like to think, anyway. So, reasonably earthquake proof.
Excellent. So, what would you say now is something that you're hunting for with the video game collection? Is there anything that you're searching and you haven't been able to find yet?
There's a couple of things that I did have many years ago and rather foolishly sold. And you might have been in that situation yourself with something.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It's at the time I thought I should be able to pick up another one. Mm-hmm. It's a console that was a collaboration between Bandai and Apple.
Really?
Yeah.
What is that called?
It's called the Bandai Pippin.
I have never heard of that.
Yeah. So
you had one.
I had a couple, actually.
You had a couple.
I had a couple, and they were unused in the box.
Oh, wow.
But unfortunately, it was one of those of many items that I sold due to space issues.
Oh, wow.
The price has really jumped up a lot in the last few years. So they're around. I'm not quite willing to pay what they're asking at the moment.
Right.
So that's one I'd love to get back in the collection at some point.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's called the Pippin.
Yeah, the Bandai Pippin.
I'm gonna look that up
right
now.
Yeah, please do.
Because I'd like to have a visual. And I'll if you're going to watch on YouTube, I'll add a picture as well.
So it's was released in 1996. So I don't know if Jobs was back in control then. I believe that might have been during the dark era of Apple, possibly.
Really?
So that makes it even more interesting. It completely failed. Completely failed.
Yeah.
They released it in the US as well.
Yeah, because I've never heard of it.
Yeah,
so that's why I was thinking it should, maybe not that successful.
wasn't successful at all. It was a fairly good system. It ran on Mac OS, I believe.
Oh, yeah, I can see on the picture it's got a hookup to a computer.
Yeah, so you could actually use it as a computer as well.
Oh, wow.
So it was fairly versatile, but just did not do well at all. And there was a lot of unsold inventory.
Really?
Yeah.
So what's interesting to me as well, especially like video game lore, is what companies will do with unused or unsold products. Like, isn't it is it E.T.?
E.T., yeah.
The game that they dumped thousands into the desert or something?
Yeah, and that did actually happen.
I think there's a documentary.
There is a documentary on that. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
I've watched it, but I can't remember the name.
It's a fantastic documentary where they actually go back and excavate the site, the alleged site, and they find copies of the game and old boxes and manuals and things like that.
So
that did actually happen.
Amazing.
Yeah,
so I wonder what happened to the Pippin, like, where, you know, did they just use the parts for something else, sell them out? Who knows?
I guess if it was economically viable, they might have salvaged some parts. I think a lot of it just ended up in storage in various places, and collectors found out about it, and now it's a highly collectible item. So
wow, that's amazing.
There is that kind of cycle with a lot of things as well, where they're literally just junk for a certain period, and then people get interested in them, and they start to become collectible.
Right.
I've noticed that with a lot of systems.
Yeah. I like the the Sega Dreamcast.
Fantastic system.
I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
And that one didn't really take off like they thought it would.
No. I mean, and that was a worldwide release as well. I remember those in Australia. And at the time, it was a fantastic system.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, it was a great system. I don't really know why people didn't take to it.
I don't know either. I mean, when did that come out? Because that was around when the same time like Xbox first came out,
I think,
PlayStation?
Maybe it was late 90s, I believe.
Yeah.
And I think the N64 would have already been around, and that was kind of the dominant system at the time.
That's right, yeah.
But then PlayStation.
Yeah, then that came out.
Yeah, so there's a lot of competition, I suppose.
Yeah.
And maybe people had moved on to the PlayStation era, started to forget about poor old Sega.
Yeah, I know, jeez. Kind of makes me sad, too, because didn't in Akihabara they shut down one of the Sega arcades?
I believe so.
But they changed it into a new one, I think.
Yeah, correct? There's still a couple of those massive Sega arcades around. Mm-hmm. There was one down at the port area. I can't remember the name of it. It's in Tokyo, like the port area. They had a massive Sega.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, like multi-level. And that actually had amusements like roller coasters and stuff in it. So, yeah, that one's pretty good. That's a proper mini theme park. Yeah.
Not to divert to arcades, but I really love arcades. And I wish you would imagine that Tokyo would have more, but they just don't. And then there was one place right in Kawasaki. Oh, what was it called? Aware no Warehouse or something like that.
Okay.
Huge, huge building.
Right.
And it was actually made up to look old and decrepit.
Nice. Okay.
But inside was like five levels of arcades. It was really amazing.
You're getting me excited here.
But they shut it shut down a few years ago.
Oh, no.
I know.
Okay.
But yeah, I'd like to check out that other one you mentioned.
Yeah. Well, where that is, the name is Odaiba. Odaiba.
Okay.
So, and there's kind of a retro arcade there as well.
Oh, really?
It's not a massive one, but they've got old pinball machines.
That's what I was going to bring up.
Old arcades. Not a huge amount of them, but it's a good place to spend an hour or so.
Okay. Yeah, we'll have to talk later because I love pinball as well, and I cannot find a place to play it. There's just no pinball machines.
That's the only place that I've even seen pinball machines. Yeah, they've got maybe, I don't know, 10 or so, and they're all vintage ones, but they've got a lot of nice arcades there as well.
Just give me one and I'll be happy.
Yeah, but it's hard to find the pinballs.
Yeah, I'm very surprised.
And pinball's got a bit of an interesting history as well because I've got a couple of friends in the US that are really into their pinballs as well. Mm. So they were telling me that at one time, pinball machines were illegal in the US because it was considered some form of gambling or something.
Wow, interesting.
So a lot of them would be made in America, but only for the export market.
Gotcha.
So,
interesting.
Yeah.
wow.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise for me because when I think pinball, I just think America.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
I think of Pinball Wizard.
Pinball Wizard, yeah, that's true, that's true. Yeah, hard to find them in Japan.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Like I said, I haven't been able to find one. And even though I've searched, I've, you know, looked for some, but I can't seem to find.
Could definitely be a business opportunity.
That's what
there.
I was thinking,
I'm sure there's more than just the two of us that would like to play pinball.
Well, you know what's, I don't know about in Australia, but America, what's become popular is kind of like the bar game, a barcade, basically.
Yeah.
And I was definitely thinking about starting something like that in Japan.
I've been thinking along those lines, yeah, like cafe and then bar at night or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically something that I could just keep open all day.
Right.
And people could come in as they want and during the daytime grab a coffee or something.
Yeah, play some games.
That's right. That's right.
Definitely. All right, we'll talk
well,
after.
Look, I've got the stuff.
That's true, actually.
So
you've got all the hookups too, I'm sure. So.
Yeah.
All right,
I've got the base, you know, product that we'd need.
That's
so
true. All right, we'll talk off air.
Yeah. But that's actually been a goal of mine for a while to set something like that
all right,
up.
All right. So. Same here. We'll talk.
Okay.
So let's divert a little bit to
sure.
watches, because I'm also a big fan of watches, and that's the other thing you said you collect. So you're currently wearing a Casio.
I do have a Casio on my wrist at the moment. It's one of the ones that has a calculator on it, but it also has a TV and a VCR remote.
I love it.
which I guess could, in a more modern age, could be used for DVD or possibly even digital devices.
Right, yeah.
Possibly.
I wonder how you could also set that up, because we talked earlier, it's IR.
It is IR.
So anything that could detect IR, maybe?
I suppose so. Like, it actually has 40 different channels where you can program a channel depending on the brand of the equipment that you have. So
what year is it? Do you know?
This one was first released in 93, I believe.
Okay.
So we're going back a while for that one. Everything still works on it, which I love Casio.
They're
so reliable.
Mm-hmm. And not really expensive either.
Not particularly.
Especially if you're getting like a bass version.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually like the bass. I don't know the name of it, unfortunately. But
it's like there's one model that's like F19 or something like that. It's a very simple, just all black Casio, and they've been making the same one for something like 30 years or
amazing.
More, and they haven't changed anything on it.
I love it. It's one of my favorites I used to have one, and I'd rock it all the time.
they're a great company. I've even got some of their really early digital watches from the mid to late 70s. So they've been going a while with the watches, and
it sounds like it. And they're spread musical instruments, all kinds of.
That's right. Like they've really diversified and are still going strong. The calculators were a huge market for them as well.
That's right.
So that's always what I had growing up, Casio calculators. So
good company.
Really good. Yeah. But I'm interested in their history as well and sort of how they got started and their products mainly throughout the 70s, 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
90s for me is when I was exposed to G-Shock watches, which is Casio.
Very popular now.
So I was into sort of the extreme sports, and I'd go to some music festivals. I remember going to the Warp Tour, and they had Casio, the G-Shocks on display there.
It
kind of fit in well with that, with what I was into back then. So I became interested in the G-Shocks then. I didn't even realize they were a Casio product at first.
Because they're very different from like the style you might imagine Casio being.
That's right.
And how many do you have of the G-Shocks?
G-Shocks, I'm up to around 60
moment. Wait.
Yeah.
60?
Yeah, about 60.
You are really a collector.
I take it pretty seriously. A lot of time and money has been wasted on this.
Do you wear them?
I do. I have maybe 10 or so that I wear regularly.
Okay. But some you're keeping, you're just preserving.
A lot of them have never been worn.
Okay.
So there's a lot of them, even going back to the early to mid-90s, I've got a lot in the collection that have never been on a wrist.
Wow.
So,
I hope you have double locks on your doors.
It's a pretty good security system. Okay, good. Yeah. monitored and everything. So,
Oh, that's good.
That was one of the draws to this particular apartment building. Mm. Like it's in a very quiet and secure location.
That's good.
I feel pretty confident about the collection being there.
Excellent. Sorry. I want to keep talking about watches, but I did have a question about that. I don't know, but with the video games, do you have to keep a certain temperature or do you not think about that? Because the summers here get really hot. I don't know if there's any degrading or something that may happen, or especially sunlight. I'm sure you don't keep anything in sunlight.
No direct sunlight. Yeah. Mainly that my concern with that is it'll fade boxes and things like that. So try and keep them out of sunlight. Summer does get a little... Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of summers in Japan. Mm. It's the humidity, which can possibly damage circuit boards and things like that. I haven't had any issues with that at the moment.
Okay, that's good.
A lot of the consoles are 20 or more years old, and they're still going. We're still working. So
just blowing it.
That's right. Yeah, with the NES. Yeah. I haven't had any huge issues, but I am concerned a little about the humidity. So I'll have to see how we go in the future. But
I've got temperature control.
Yeah, I try and keep it fairly under control. Yeah. Quite often, we'll have the air conditioner on in the main room, and I've got sliding doors that I can slide back into the collection room. And that'll kind of keep the temperature somewhat balanced.
Okay. So, well, that's good.
Yeah.
I would hate for anything to get damaged just out of temperature, you know.
It is a concern. Okay. I'll just have to monitor it as I go. Like, I've only been at this place for a couple of years, but it does tend to get quite hot and humid in there. So I'll just have to see how I go with it.
Yeah. Okay. Just to wrap up.
Yeah, sure.
So I mentioned a game that you were hunting for some system, but what about a watch? Is there a dream watch that you just would love to get your hands on for your collection?
There's a few G-Shocks that I'm missing.
Oh, yeah?
So
okay.
I have the very first G-Shock, which was 1983.
Okay.
And I still wear that one.
Nice.
And that's a great feeling to own that.
Mm.
But they released a couple of ones after that had special features that could handle very low and very high temperatures.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Because apparently there was an issue with the first G-Shock that couldn't handle certain temperatures, mainly low temperatures. So they released a couple of models that could handle particularly low temperatures for certain climates.
Oh, wow.
I'd love to get hold of one of those. So.
Okay. Yeah, speaking of, you mentioned earlier with the Pippin having sold it, I had a 1968... Accutron Space View.
I love those.
Oh my gosh. I stupidly sold it, and I dream about that watch every day.
They are amazing.
I don't care what it takes.
Yeah.
I'm going to get that exact model I had back because, like, I loved it. Great condition.
Nice.
Oh.
Because they did a few different faces with those as well. They had like a squared off face and a circular one.
They had like the funky, like, TV. It was almost like a half moon style.
Yes.
Oh man,
they're an amazing watch.
The watches they took to space.
Yeah.
So that's why it's the space.
That's right.
For those listeners that don't know.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Sorry. So it's got history there for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one I wouldn't mind grabbing at some point in time, but.
Yeah.
Prices for them, they've gone up a bit recently as well.
I got mine at a great price. I had my neighbor actually was a collector of watches, and he had a couple Space Views, and he actually gave me the band to like an original. And you know, of course, when I sold it, I included that band, and it's gonna make me sad for the rest of the day.
Yeah, there's always regrets. But then there's other things that you'll get along the way, and you occasionally you'll have a really good pickup, like you'll get something that's really rare, or you'll get something for a really good price, and
it
kind of
that.
Offsets it a little bit. But I think every collector's got that, you know, that
Surely.
Regret of something that they've let go of, and
because if you're not a collector, you're just a hoarder at that point.
That's so right. That's right.
I'd much rather be called a collector with the ups and downs of collecting than just hoarding everything.
Yeah, and part of the collecting thing is buying and selling, so and meeting other people that are interested in it. Mm. So I've met a lot of people along the way. I've met some collectors that make my collection look like nothing.
Yeah.
They'll have warehouses
full
of stuff. There's a couple in America that I know. Mm. There was a guy in Austria who was a really serious collector. He's actually written books about his collection.
Wow.
So
that's pretty big. He's got books about it.
So it's great to to deal with those people, and that's how we got introduced, just through buying and selling and swapping things.
Yeah,
so
that's always fun.
That's part of it as well.
Yeah. I love bartering as well.
So yeah,
that always plays well into collecting.
Oh, definitely. Like, I've always been, trying to get a good deal on things,
right,
and going to yard sales and checking out vintage shops and things like that. That's part of the fun.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. The hunt.
That's
it. It's a big, big part of it.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, great. Thank you for your time. I really enjoyed talking with you, because as a somewhat collector of things, it's always fun to, as you said, meet people and talk about it. So
that's right. Always happy to chat with somebody who's got a shared passion. Perhaps I can go into more detail at some point and we can actually check out some of the consoles and things like that.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Another day, perhaps.
Yeah, we'll go deeper into it.
We will.
All right, thank you.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to English Roundtable, made possible by Kanda Gaigo Career College in Tokyo, Japan. If you enjoyed hearing natural English conversation, subscribe and like us wherever you're listening, and check us out on YouTube, Twitter, and our other SNS platforms, which will be in the description for this episode. Head over to the YouTube page to see some of the keywords we used in the conversation and other activities to test your English listening skills. Thanks again, and we'll see you in the next episode.